This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. This is episode number 131, and my name is Derek Gallimore. So today we are joined again by Chris Urbano of Winery Philippines. We had an introduction to Chris in episode 128. He's a fascinating guy. He was raised pretty much in Indonesia, has family background from Australia, and has an incredible insight into Southeast Asia and the Philippines. Today we talk to him about his Winery Philippines company, which he is building himself. Now, winery isn't so much aligned to what we talk about here in Outsource Accelerator, but it's a fantastic insight into Chris's knowledge of commerce, but also building businesses in Southeast Asia. And it offers a lot of insight into business here in the Philippines and the opportunities and some of the downsides to it. So it's a really interesting listen. I'm sure you'll get a lot from it. If you want to get in touch with Chris or know any more about this episode, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/131. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. I'm happy to be joined by Chris Urbano again of Winery Philippines. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you, Derek?
Fantastic. Fantastic. And we have had Chris on previously to discuss his vast experience in Southeast Asia and the Philippines and his kind of commercial interests here. I wanted to get Chris back to talk about his major commercial interest, which is Winery Philippines, and his insights into the market and commercial experience as a result of that. So I suppose initially, Chris, can you just introduce yourself and briefly your journey to this point?
Sure. So I'm Chris Urbano, the Chief Sommelier and Managing Director of Winery Philippines. We started Winery officially incorporated in late 2015. It's the first wine e-commerce curated marketplace of the Philippines. So what we mean by that is we take wines from around the world, typically direct sourced by ourselves or by some select import partners. We curate those in a way that suits the local Philippine market, and we make them available at the best possible prices and convenience by cutting out pretty much every middleman in the supply chain. So it's been a popular model so far with our customers. Why did I go into this line of work? I mean, I had a broad view on the Philippines and the Southeast Asia opportunity for many years. I'm an economist and Asian studies specialist by training and spent a lot of time in the region in my high school and university days. And I was an escapee from the Australian rat race, former management consultant. Had two or three years of doing that and decided that the golden handcuffs were not for me. So I decided to start a business in Southeast Asia instead. And I began by looking at what I thought were the big macro trends in the region. And one of the things that's always stuck with me from some of my previous consulting work is this notion that, you know, hard commodity booms are usually followed by soft commodity booms. So we've seen a massive hard commodity boom in broadly Asia, including Southeast Asia, and obviously that boom dominated, I think, by China and Northeast Asia. But what you see after that is some onshore wealth is created from the formation of manufacturing sectors, and people start to have the money in Asia to afford soft commodities. So things like, you know, premium foods, more dairy, more meat, more vegetables in their diets, and things like wine consumption start to go up as well. And that trend has, again, been led in Northeast Asia, and you're now starting to see Southeast Asia move into this soft commodity boom as well, where, you know, milk, meat, wine is all really growing out of control at the moment across the region. So I started looking at that macro trend, and then I started to look at what Australia was good at. You know, what are the, if you like, competitive advantages of Australia? And in a nutshell, the things Australia are really good at is we've got, you know, tier one resource assets. We've got a tier one agricultural sector. And we're very good in education, we're very good in professional services, and we're very good in tourism. And if you run through those five things, you find that, you know, mining, you need $1 billion or you can't even get into it anymore. It's a global scale industry now. Tourism is an onshore industry for Australia, so you could sell tour packages in Asia, but you know, it's something that inherently is delivered in Australia, not up in Southeast Asia. Education is also a fairly scale business and a little bit hard to do as a startup. Professional services is what I was already doing as a management consultant, and I still do a little bit of that on the side here to pay the bills while I build the company. But the last one, F&B, is something that you can go after even if you have fairly meager amounts of capital behind you. So you can start, you know, food and beverages can have industry structures that we describe as monopolistic competition, where you can sort of dominate in a very small niche or segment of the market in terms of either the range of products you have, that there can be a high level of differentiation even within the wine market with a particular portfolio you carry or the type of customers that you seek to service. So when I looked at all of those, I thought F&B is at the nexus of kind of this broad macro trend in Asia. It's something that Australia has a competitive advantage in supplying, and that I, as an Australian, have access to those products and can bring in. And I think the last thing, of course, is having a passion for the category. So when I looked at F&B, I was like, well, wine is something that my family used to produce in Australia, in New South Wales. So I've got some experience with the product. I love drinking the product. And when I sort of thought, okay, let's combine good business sense, you know, good macro opportunity, competitive advantage, and passion, that seemed like the logical fit for me to have a go at.
Fantastic. And as you say, like, the soft commodities follows the hard commodities, and primarily, you know, if I suppose I'm describing the same thing here, but it's as a result of discretionary spending and as a result of a burgeoning now middle class where previously there wasn't, and people's kind of tastes expanding and kind of taking on tastes and value associations with kind of Western products. Yeah. Are you seeing all of that happening in the Philippines? Is it kind of following that path where the Philippines is getting a bit more cash, it's spending a bit more on discretionary products, and it's adopting varied Western tastes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think when I first moved up and sort of said I was interested in getting into this area, people would still say to me, oh, you know, the Philippines is just a beer and spirits country. You know, people drink the local rum and the local beers. And, you know, I would say that, you know, walk down La Vista Street or through Greenbelt at the moment in Makati City, and those assumptions would be very quickly shaken, I think, when you go and see what's happening in sort of restaurant menus. The explosion, I think, of more cosmopolitan dining options, and a part of that is obviously what's going on in the demand for wine. So certainly when I moved up here, we were seeing, you know, looking at some industry reports on the Philippines, and growth in wine importation was you know, growth rates in excess of 10 up to 15% year on year in the wine category. And interestingly, that growth, when I analysed it, was price-led. So the volumes were growing, you know, well in line with GDP at about, you know, 6% year on year. But the values were also going up. The price points were going up by about, you know, 6% year on year. So when you combine those two forces, you're seeing a very quick growth in the overall wine sales value in the Philippines, combination of new wine drinkers, but also people moving up the value curve as their their knowledge of wine increases, and as they start to experiment more with different styles and move from, I guess, drinking the Yellowtail and the Hardys, you know, $5 specials to a slightly more boutique and higher quality options.
And this is an observation, you know, about the Philippines, but generally of commercial interest. You know, I assume you realize as well that it's good to be an early player. Very good to be the first big player, but also you don't want to enter a market where it's not yet ready to receive things. How do you see, you know, you don't want to be too early because then there's no market there or interest there to support you. How do you see that delicate balance of not wanting to be too early into a market that isn't quite ready to receive you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that even now, I think we're probably operating, you know, one, 2, 3 years ahead of the curve. And certainly when I started this, it felt like there was some demand there, but largely in expat quarters who are a bit more familiar with, I guess, both wine, but knowing the difference between good and bad wine, and also being comfortable and familiar with online shopping itself, right? So there's a couple of things that are kind of need to happen to enable a strong consumer demand for a wine e-commerce model. And, you know, one is actually understanding the difference, you know, knowing enough about wine to make informed choices or even seek information about how to make an informed choice. But the second is what's going on in e-commerce more broadly in terms of the infrastructure that supports it. So things like, you know, fulfillment, payment options, and so forth. And I think if you tried this business model out about 5 years ago, it would very much be on the you'd be on the bleeding edge. I would say we feel that we're not on a bleeding edge, but we are at the leading edge of the trend of e-commerce in wine, certainly. And you know, the thing is, if you don't get in early, you're going to end up basically being a follower. And certainly when it comes to e-commerce and digital marketing, you know, Google's only got 10 results on the first page. If you come very late to the party, you've pretty much already lost the organic search race. It's very hard to recover that. So we're sort of comfortable where we're at, but we are seeing already in the Philippines right now on sort of the generic international brands of beer, wine, and spirits, there's a number of players, and they're just mushrooming right now, who are simply putting up a simple Facebook page and a very simple e-commerce website. They're using the 3PL logistics services to fulfill, and they're just basically grabbing stock from like a Diageo or Moët Hennessy and just slapping it online. And those players are increasing very quickly. So there's actually very few barriers to entry in that kind of model. Our key differentiation is we're a lot more like what you would see in Australia or the US, with a highly curated model, deep customer loyalty, you know, building a digital wine community around the product. And we are leading edge in that. But, you know, I wouldn't want to wait another year or two to get into the Philippine market in e-commerce, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned like the e-commerce infrastructure, and again, you know, whether a market is ready to consume your product, but also it's important that there's sufficient infrastructure there to build your infrastructure on top of. And I think people get very surprised in developing economies when they come here, and certainly when I came here the first time about 8-9 years ago, you know, any of the kind of Western standards of paying for things by a debit card, you know, having kind of a cashless society, not needing receipts. None of that really exists in the Philippines, and it's quite common across a lot of developing economies. And then, so your winery Philippines is a very modern, very slick, very kind of minimalist and very e-commerce approach to things. But do you find it you know, and I assume then it's a lot harder to build out a slick e-commerce model in the Philippines, where the infrastructure isn't quite there to support it, versus in Australia, where everything's already a bit plug and play.
Yeah, well, I think you, while you were speaking just then, the metaphor I had in mind is that we're a little bit like a swan cruising along on the lake, where on the surface we look very slick and a clean interface and easy to use for our customers, but underneath is where we're kicking like mad to keep the operation going, because that's where we actually have to, I guess, deal with the Philippine business operating environment.
So you for the consumer, you want a very slick interface, but then you almost compensate for that behind the scenes, because you have to then integrate with the kind of manual interfaces that the rest of the society is still dealing with, yeah?
Yeah, correct. So what we see, I mean, so our front end, our order management system, and our back end accounting is all world class e-commerce. You know, for anyone interested in the subject, where we use Shopify at the front, Deer Inventory in the OMS, and Xero is our back end. And you know, our ability, if somebody orders on our site and pays with a credit card, I mean, we have instantaneous, you know, order raised, sales invoice raised, collection of payment is instantaneous, and all of this just comes straight through to my phone. I can see end to end that a order has been successfully processed, and all we have to do is dispatch the stock. So that is where e-commerce is easy in the Philippines. But the challenge then is, how do you interface that very slick system there to the Philippines BIR in terms of your tax compliance and reporting and generating stuff in the standards that they expect? You need to print, you know, then plug that system into printing, you know, receipts out on a dot matrix printer, you know.
All right.
So you've got a sort of
triplicate.
Yeah, a triplicate dot matrix printing. And you just sort of think, this is crazy. I mean, we can't just print an invoice and send it over. It's got to be on this archaic system. So you end up having to sort of customize your slick e-commerce templates to fit the parameters of a 1980s era printer, which is quite amusing. And customers don't really see that. And certainly when we started, we were still, you know, doing pen and paper sales invoices. So customer instantaneously orders, and then the first thing you do is have to write with a pen and paper their order down on a BIR receipt, you know, with a pen. So it's sort of very interesting to see that, you know, how do you blend, you know, 21st century technology with, I guess, the Philippine regulatory system that just hasn't evolved for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, it's something that I always kind of I'm interested in, because, you know, I'm setting up a business which is operated from here but effectively serving people in the West, and there's more friction to doing business here, and there's you know, different kind of hurdles. But having said that, then your cost base is, you know, unequivocally lower, so there's different contrasts, isn't there? And I kind of think of the McDonald's index, where the McDonald's index is an economist index, and it tracks the cost of producing a Big Mac in various countries, and kind of anti-intuitive or whatever. It's more expensive to make a Big Mac in India versus a Big Mac in the US, because India doesn't have the infrastructure, the volumes. And it's an interesting kind of index paradox here as well, isn't it? In that, you know, to make a enterprise level e-commerce structure, there's many more points of friction, sort of thing, isn't there? But and that's why then I think that you're getting all these people springing up on Facebook that just opt to go the easy route. They sell within their community. They, if they sell 5 bottles a month, they're probably happy because they don't have any overhead costs. And then, but then that unfortunately keeps the society down into like little small sole trader kind of existences. Yeah, there's a strange paradox there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, in a way, for the market, you know, these little players that are popping up, you know, a lot of them are sort of just doing relationship based selling. So they'll, you know, tell all of their friends in social media that they're now selling, you know, this product, but the thing is, because they're subscale and don't have any means of really differentiating their business, doing any kind of, you know, differentiated marketing, or even having a differentiated product range by being able to import, effectively the people who are making the money is the you know, the big importer distributor who brings in, you know, Johnny Walker and Jack Daniels and, you know, all of the brand name liquors. They're actually the ones who make the money, and all of these smaller entrants who pop up end up basically in a race to the bottom on price, because none of them have any means of differentiation. So this example will be familiar to anyone in the Philippines. If you drive up to Gaytay for the weekend, you'll always go past this stretch of road where they sell the Japanese white corn to passing motorists. And you know, the Philippines is just full of markets like this, where there's a single product which is typically controlled by the elite, and it's a commodity style product. And then they allow small Filipinos to sell that product, but they all basically are selling exactly the same thing with none whatsoever. So the only differentiator becomes how vigorously you flap your arms at passing motorists to make a sale. And that's pretty much what we're seeing happening now in kind of small-time Philippine e-commerce. Is it's just the extent to which you hit up your friends on Facey or Instagram, and how aggressive you are in your daily posting that will get you, you know, more or less sales. But you're pretty much selling a commodified product. Diageo and Moët Hennessy are making all the money, and you're getting just enough to basically warrant doing your posts and putting it on the back of a motorbike to send the product to somebody.
Yeah, it's kind of a subsistence income, isn't it, which then never has potential to scale, because, as you say, there's not the margins and there's not the differentiators involved. But so talk to me about Winery Philippines, because, of course, we do have a listenership here in the Philippines. But, you know, you, like, wine is absolutely kind of blowing up around the world, isn't it? And especially in the newer markets. And also wine tech is also exploding, and you're obviously savvy enough to see that coming. By the way, do you call it VinTech, or what's it referred to?
The wine fridges, you mean?
No, the wine technology, like FinTech, is...
Okay, so sorry, I think I just did a plug for the wine fridge company.
Yeah, maybe you did, actually. Although,
I don't know. So I've not heard the term wine tech or VinTech, T-E-C-H, thrown around.
But it is burgeoning, isn't it? And because there's Vivino obviously making quite an impact on the wine world, yeah. But anyway, so you're in this space now, and you know, it's kind of a burgeoning tech space within a burgeoning sort of sector of consumable goods. But so, what do you see your kind of strengths with Winery Philippines, and you know, where are you? What sort of products are you launching on top of this?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the you know, when you look at the developed wine markets at the moment, the big focus is around personalization and curation of product selection. So wine is a market that, you know, far more so than beer or spirits, there's incredible differentiation even between vintages of the same wines, and incredible numbers of labels that are available to choose from, styles, and the quality and the extent to which you like the product is quite opaque until you actually open it, pay your money, and pour it into a glass and taste it. So that, you know, really lends itself to then how do you provide consumers with, or how do you de-risk the purchase for consumers by giving them a very high degree of certainty through things like curation. And increasingly curation is being done through algorithmic approaches, you know, either explicit taste-based curation, or, you know, collecting, you know, data from thousands of users and comparing clusters of taste palettes effectively between a large enough population, you can start to make recommendations. So that's the big tech play that I'm seeing in developed countries. And I think the other one is on sort of supply chain, in on-premise accounts, restaurants, and minimizing stockouts and so on through sort of smart ordering and predictive analytics and so far on the wine portfolios. Now, funnily enough, those kind of big tech plays, I don't think yet are as applicable in emerging wine markets, because they sort of presuppose that consumers know enough about the product to know what they like, or it presupposes that restaurants actually have the technology themselves to interface with a slick, you know, wine portal or something to order their products. And both of those assumptions would be, I would say, incorrect to make about the Philippines and largely the Asia wine market at this point. You know, people are still very much ordering with cell phones and pen and paper and emails, and consumers, I think, don't really know what they're looking for. So we think that the application of technology here is a far more sort of fundamental, how do we improve the channel? And the biggest problem we see in the Philippines is in consumers accessing good wine is actually corruption in the wine supply chain. Now, that's a, you know, a bold statement, but let me explain it for a moment. At the moment, if you want to get a wine listed in, say, a Philippine supermarket or a, you know, a major hotel, you normally have to pay, and they use a euphemism of marketing support or MS, and that's often a very, like, large sum of money, and usually paid, you know, directly in cash to a purchasing officer or procurement manager of sorts, in order to have your products listed. And when you have to pay large amounts of marketing support to somebody to get listed, that inherently means that has to come out of the margins of the product. So it means that you're either going to put in a really, you know, cheap, nasty wine, because you actually have to recoup that cost in terms of the marketing investment you've made. Or if you put in a decent wine, the price of it is just absolutely sky high for the quality, because you've had to basically, you know, get clipped by these decision makers in the supply chain. So we think the big opportunity to use technology in the Philippine market is to just basically cut out all this nonsense in the supply chain of kickbacks and payments and marketing support through going direct to the consumer. And when you go direct to the consumer, you know, the things that they're looking for is obviously quality, value for money, convenience and reliability of the channel. That's really what we've structured our e-commerce model around. You know, when you talk about new products that we're releasing, so we see a big opportunity at the moment in the Philippines when it comes comes to sort of discovery and education, not in sort of just putting up generic, here's a description of the wine and you might like this. We think that empowering them in discovery through subscription models is actually a really smart move in this market, where you say, you know, trust this channel, we won't sell you a bad wine, but let's get you on a 2 or 3 or 6 bottle a month subscription program, where we will just basically expose you to quality wines from around the world. And then after each of those monthly boxes are delivered to you, you can come back to us with a, you know, which did you like, which did you not like. We'll run a special on those wines for the following month, so you can buy them at a good discount, the ones that you like the most. And over time, that's a way of, I guess, consumers limiting their risk in that they're buying from a trusted channel that guarantees the quality of its wine, but regularly getting exposed to different drops and having an ongoing relationship with a provider that's sort of helping walk them through the wine journey. So we sort of see e-commerce as a means of enabling discovery, delivering a far higher quality of wine at a far better price to consumers that's currently available, and obviously making the purchasing experience much more palatable than it currently is in terms of, you know, the information available in supermarkets, which is very limited.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it? It's a good observation that you make that, you know, if the wine appreciation market isn't that mature here, then a lot of that sort of common information that you provide really isn't so relevant. And then you are countering that with a subscription model. And generally, I love subscription models. I think they're sort of a win-win for both sides of the market. But also then people are buying into your curated product line, and that is part of your value add, isn't it, in the curation of the product, which they then get through the subscription model. So no, that's fantastic. Yeah. If people do want to know any more about Winery Philippines, if they want to like sign up for your subscription, how can they do that, Chris?
Yes, well, if I can give a blatant plug this time, Derek.
Absolutely.
It's going to be called the Cavino program. Cavino is like your fellow wine drinker in Tagalog, is how you would translate that. And we're actually launching the program later this month in March. It's been on soft launch, very popular with the initial 20 customers that we piloted it with. And those people joining the Cavino program will be able to choose from 2, 3, or 6 bottles per month delivered to their door. At price points starting at sort of 2,000 pesos for the 2-bottle option. So that will be available later this month from Winery Philippines, self-service, or they can do an inquiry, but you'll be able to actually book and pay for a subscription fully online through winery.ph. And of course, the many events that we run around the city are also good options for people to come in and get to know us and try the product, and then, you know, talk to some of our wine educators or sales representatives there to discuss if they'd like to get on a subscription as well. So online, or come along to one of our events and have a chat to us.
Yes, fantastic. And of course, I have been to one of your events, one of your Wine and Dine events, and I really do recommend them. They're a fantastic environment to learn about great wine, but also food, yeah, because you are very much a foodie yourself.
Yeah, well, I think if you're a wine lover, you tend to have an interest in cooking and food, and you know, it almost just lends itself naturally to being a foodie, right? I think more so than beer and spirits, and I'm not saying they don't at all pair and lend themselves to food, but I think there's just incredible variation in wine, and there's a real pleasure in sort of when you get that perfect pair of exactly the right wine to exactly the right food, and you had that, I don't know, little twist of fresh herbs from your garden, and you had that bottle of wine that came from, you know, that particular winery that you love, and it was the particular vintage that, you know, was your favorite. That when it comes together, it's just a really magical experience and one of life's pleasures.
Perfect. So thank you so much, Chris, and I certainly encourage anyone to look into the subscription and or go to your wine evenings, if of course they're in Manila or the Philippines. But if anyone wants to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Sure, just drop me a line at chris@winery.ph, and you can always check out Winery Philippines at winery.ph, the website. We'll hope to see you there.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chris. Okay, that was Chris Urbano of Winery Philippines. Of course, if you want to get in touch with him, that is winery.ph. And if you want to get in touch with him or know any more about this, then go to our show notes at outsourceaccelerator.com/131. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.